Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben Standing's with us every Monday and Friday at 12 noon on this show as our Washington Commanders insider. He writes a Substack report and column called Last Man Standing. He's got a podcast by the same name, and you can follow him on X on Twitter at Ben Standing. Let's start where we always start, your big takeaways from the 34-27 loss in Atlanta. Do we have Ben?
We do.
Yep. Well, it'd be nice if I could hear him.
It would. Give me one sec.
Yeah, let's try to get Ben into a spot where it makes sense. By the way, one of the callers mentioned, and I didn't mention that. Yeah, there was a face mask on that first drive of the second half. Caden Ellis got away with a face mask on that 2nd and 14 when Marcus Mariota unloaded it incomplete, and then it did look like Hughes interfered with Chris Moore on a 3rd and 7. On that drive before the Matt Gay 52-yard field goal that made it 17-13. I thought those were two missed calls. Do we have Ben? Okay, so go ahead. Give me your big thoughts about yesterday's loss in Atlanta.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, you know, if we want to talk a certain reality of the world, right, they were missing a lot of players on offense, and you know, that side of the ball was, you know, a little up and down, but I thought, you know, they competed, and, you know, to put up 27 points when you had, you know, all the pieces they were missing and who they had out there, I think that's pretty credible. But of course, that's not really the story almost on any level, because all that could go away by next week. The story is what's going to continue, and that's the defense. And, you know, it's now 4 weeks into the season, and it's been two games where they've looked really good against two teams that were just, were disjointed at best and just weren't, you know, up to snuff. And the defense looked poor in two games where the opponents either, you know, were just, you know, fundamentally really good, and they have playmakers, as Atlanta certainly did yesterday. And, you know, we can all say it's early, and the team certainly did, and it's a justifiable point, of course, but it's not just four games. It's four games plus what we saw last year. And, you know, it's still becoming too much of they can't get stops when they have to. They're not making as, you know, big plays when they have to. And, you know, I think it's definitely concerning. And then there's, you know, there's some individual aspects of it that we can discuss as well. But I just think as a broad statement, you know, just the defense has just in the two games with opponents that you would say, okay, this is like a legitimate test. They haven't been there at all. And, you know, again, look, I think missing Will Harris was a legitimate thing. I think he was doing a lot for them back there in the secondary in terms of coverage and just, you know, communication and things like that. And, you know, Dietrich Wise, you know, another one they lost, and he's big for the run game. But, you know, this was the first also real running back they faced who could hit the perimeter. And obviously Bijan's what we argue with the best running back in football, but he torched them all day long, similar to how Saquon Barkley did and others did last year. So I think that's the part that's, you know, distressing. Again, it's not that it's the season's over. They could go back and win in L.A. this weekend, all these things. But four games in, it's just too many signs of what we saw last year for me to be like, just brush it off. It's like, well, it was just a game, not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the overarching takeaway is, you know, 839 yards and 61 points against the two teams they have faced that were capable offensively. And they're not even the best two teams they will face offensively. They still play teams like Detroit. You know, Kansas City's getting healthier and look great on offense. Dallas is the number one yardage offensive team in the league. The team they're going to face this week has offensive capability. And of course, I'm not even mentioning the Eagles, which come late in the season twice in the final 3 weeks. And that's why you got to be careful. As you and I have talked about together, and we've talked about individually, you know, taking the Giant and Raider game and extrapolating it at all about what this defense is. Now, I will say, I do think it has more talent up front, and I think it's better up front than it was last year. But on the back end, there seems to be major issues. And I would ask you, because I don't know what the answer is. If it's more coaching, scheme, play calling, or more talent execution by players. My guess is it's probably somewhere in the middle. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the question. You know, I'm sure you got the same thing in your Twitter timelines. You know, get rid of Joe Witt, make changes on that side of things. And it's always simple to say that, of course. And sometimes it's a simple decision that the organizations make. I'm not saying that's happening here. I just mean it's easier to fire the coach than the players. But yeah, I'm with you. It's hard to know exactly what's going on. I mean, you know, for example, Bobby Wagner is a hell of a player, right? We all get that. The great instincts. Just last week, he had two sacks. You know, all that. But when you get him, what you could see, and Atlanta's like trying to isolate him in coverage once with Kyle Pitts, once with Bijan Robinson, and like that's just not a fair fight. So what do you do? Bobby Wagner plays every snap for your defense. He's the signal caller. You know, he's the glue to the whole thing because it connects the front and the back. What do you do? Take him off? But even if you do, who are you putting in? Jordan McGee didn't even play a snap this game. You know, to put out an extra defensive back, right? Let's say that's your plan. Well, that's what they tried to get away from this going into this year from last year when they played so much nickel. So, again, I'm not putting it on him. I'm just saying that's one example as to I don't know what the answer is. And you know, there's also, you know, Marshawn Lattimore, you know, he's not living up to the hype of being, you know, a top-end cornerback, especially right. One that you made the trade for. And, the pass rush, you know, has had good moments this season, but, you know, one sack yesterday, for the most part, Michael Penix looked pretty comfortable back there. You know, where's that? We know they don't have necessarily elite talent up front, but they have, like you said, they have improved depth, but, you know, that didn't translate yesterday. So it's not this isn't an excuse. It's kind of just to say, look, this level of where the football is, I'm just being honest, like, I can't compete with what the actual football people know. So if they can't figure this out, it's hard, I think, for the rest of us to just be like, oh, fire this guy, bench that guy. But it does feel like something has to give.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, there are things we can identify as fans that are pretty obvious. Like Bobby Wagner shouldn't be isolated in coverage against wide receivers, tight ends, or running backs that can catch the ball. I said at the beginning, it's exactly the same conversation we had about London Fletcher towards the end of his career. London was still unbelievably, you know, solid against the run and when they sent him after a quarterback, but you saw teams searching for him when he was out there in coverage, and you're seeing that with Wagner. As far as Lattimore goes, he's struggled, but has he struggled because he's not playing more press? Should he be playing more press? Should they, you know, swap, you know, the picks or the motion? You know, these are things that are really hard to know for sure, but there seems like a few obvious ones. And yeah, I mean, going back 4 weeks, it was like this team's biggest mystery is, did they get any better on defense? Through four games, you might say that the talent up front is better, but the overall output isn't. And that means they need Jaden to be Superman a lot of these weeks, and he's missed the last two games. But they were able to win one, and Marcus played well. So let's move on to what's next with Jaden. A lot of the pregame reporting suggests that he is ready to go and will return against the Chargers Sunday. Is that what you're hearing?
I wouldn't say so much hearing, but it's just, you know, looking at the landscape. Again, the week before week three, he only got in a limited practice at the end of the week, and it was pretty clear that he wasn't really that close there. Whereas last week, the first 2 days were limited practices. We saw him on the field doing some work. He said he was fine, which, you know, is obviously take that with a grain of salt when the player says that. But okay, he's saying that. At least it felt like there was a more of a possibility that he could, you know, get closer to that. So yeah, I think you would think that there would be a much stronger chance for him to be able to go this week now that they've given him that rest for the last 2 weeks. So I would think there's a pretty decent chance. Again, this week, you know, if Wednesday or no later than Thursday he's practicing in full, then I think you can feel pretty good. If it's still limited, then it'll just be, you know, whatever decisions the doctors have been making the last couple of weeks as to why they've said he can't go.
Talking to Ben Standig, it looked like, unless you help me with more people, that John Baptiste was the only injury from yesterday's game. Is that accurate? And what kind of injury does he have?
As far as I know, that's the accurate deal. He has a pec injury. Sounds like it could be one that requires missing some games. Beyond that, you know, who's to say? You know, obviously John Allen last year was, in theory, a season-ending one, and he was out for several weeks but was able to return at the end of the year. So, you know, even if they say IR, we'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, I mean, that would be just another depth play there. I mean, they did sign Preston Smith, as we know, a couple weeks ago. He's yet to play, which is reasonable considering, you know, he wasn't in a training camp or anything along those lines. But at least now they have him if, in fact, Baptiste is out for some time. So there's that. But, you know, that's, you know, how they – that other defensive end spot opposite Dorrance Armstrong, you know, how they manage that is, you know, going to be interesting. Jacob Martin is somebody that has stood out to the coaching staff, you know, since the summer. But he's, you know, he's not like a bigger run guy. He's more of a pass rush guy. I know that Witt said he can set the edge, but he's just not physically a bigger guy. So, yeah, I mean, to lose another body, again, football injuries happen. They're not the only team, obviously. But, yeah, that would be tough, you know, to at a position where with a group that it's more about depth than the individuals, to lose anybody is you know, notable.
Just finishing up the injury talk, do you have any gut feel on Terry and then on Bates and Noah Brown for Sunday in LA?
Yeah, not a ton. I mean, the Bates and Brown part, you know, with these groin injuries, and there's a little bit more than just that. You know, it's always tricky when you, with these types of soft tissue injuries, you know, how, you know, it can linger, and it can become, you know, more problematic if you rush it. So we'll have to see. Unlike with Jaden, you know, they've done nothing practice wise the last couple of weeks. So it would be hard to sit here and say, boy, you feel pretty good about them. The Terry one is interesting. It's been kind of all over the map. You know, when you hear that he supposedly wasn't having surgery, meaning that was on the table, you think, oh, well, maybe he's going to be out a few weeks. There's just some discrepancy here. What's going on? But I've also heard he could be back this week. So, you know, again, it's hard to know. He wasn't at practice at all last week. And I talked about this maybe with you, but on my podcast for sure. Like, the whole thing last week was very odd, just the way the information was being communicated. And maybe I wouldn't think it was so odd, except that, you know, we just had the summer that we had with him and having a contract dispute and all that. So I don't know what to make of, all that.
Tell me what your gut tells you about why it was odd last week.
Well, I mean, like, there's no reason for the team to say anything, right? I mean, why, you know, as we have seen, they're not exactly loose lips over there. And then, you know, what's the point of saying that their guy could need, you know, that they're even debating surgery or like the talk of a second opinion? I know Dan Quinn said that's common, and that's fine. It just doesn't, you know, why is it being discussed unless, like, it wasn't like an obvious injury, right? It's not like, I mean, we knew he went out of the game, but it wasn't like he was like writhing on the ground in pain. So it's, you know, they could have said nothing other than he's missing practice and he's got it like with Bates or Noah Brown. We're not hearing about them possibly discussing surgery or anything, right? And different injuries, I get that. But so then it's like, then it comes out that like he's getting a second opinion, very specifically this one surgeon who is, I guess, yep. If you go to this guy, it typically means, as often the case, like with like Dr. Andrews as well, things like that. If you're going to this guy, it probably means you're getting surgery, but now he's not getting surgery. I don't know. It just is like, why are we saying all these things and then not, what is the point of it other than to maybe say, hey, the guy is battling through something and he's going to play through it, even though like they're sort of hyping up that. I don't know, but this is the problem also when you have these contract issues. It now leads to the conspiracy theories a bit more, and that's where you start to get in some trouble.
No doubt. If he's under contract for 3 more years and there's no off-season drama, this is not even a thing. But we know that that's not the case, and we know that it was contentious, and we know that more likely than not, he and his agent probably aren't thrilled with the way it ended. But we'll leave it at that. Defense was obviously, number one on the list. I actually believe Atlanta played very well offensively, too. Their players, especially their star, Bijan Robinson, and they're very good. True number one in Drake London was outstanding in the game, and Penix was great. But the defense was a problem. But I also just, for a second loss on the season, I get the Bates missing in Green Bay. Your two running backs on 14 carries averaged 7.5 yards per carry. I know for Chris Rodriguez that was one big chunk run. I'd like to see the running backs, especially in context with your defense can't get off the field. You've been doubled up in time of possession, in play count in the first half. Why do you think Cliff hesitates leaning on the run more?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's almost like there's a plan going into the year. This is what we want to do. And despite some of the obvious, missing pieces, it's like he's trying to not change who they are, their identity. They're trying to just, keep things going the same. So they did that. I mean, it'd be one thing if they were averaging what they averaged on the ground, like you said, but you've got Terry out there. You've got, along with Debo, you've got Noah Brown, but they don't have that. I mean, Chris Moore was in there for 70% of the offensive snaps yesterday and had 0 catches. Luke McCaffrey got a touchdown. It was great, but, I still think there's questions there. And Jalen Lane, he was on the verge of having a much bigger day statistically than he did, but, ultimately it didn't quite work out. There's no reason to lean into that. A group. We should be leaning into the thing that's working, like you said. And Bill, had some good runs. And it's also like, I also think they're just still trying to figure out what to do with the running back. I mean, I don't know if you saw the snaps yet. Rodriguez and Krosky Merritt played the exact same number of snaps, and McNichols played one less. I mean, that is the definition of a committee of like,
yeah, I saw that. I just, if the concern with the two younger backs, the better runners, in my opinion, and the guys that should be getting double-digit carries a game, and maybe one of them the large majority of double-digit carries, if the issue is you don't trust them in pass pro, you better coach them up quickly because they need to be on the field more and they need to touch the ball as runners more. I just think that is a strength right now for this offense, especially with the receivers down, like you said, and they did not take advantage of having a bigger team than Atlanta in the trenches offensively and an opportunity to dominate, time of possession and play count with more emphasis on the run. Of course, they probably have 15 reasons why I'm an idiot for saying that, but I just point to 14 carries, 7.5 yards per carry.
Yeah, no, I wrote about this, once Eckler went out that, in terms of specifically with Bill, that, hey, maybe he isn't ready in certain areas and all that, but like, it doesn't matter right now. You don't have, in terms of playmaking, in terms of the ability, I mean, again, go back to what the whole point of sort of this offseason was. Find guys who could, make chunk gains out of the backfield. That's part of the reason why they moved on from Brian Robinson. So, like, to then not lean into that more, again, I'm not saying, you know, the Bills should be getting 15 carries a game. But like you said, between he and Rodriguez, at least, maybe they could get a few more looks. Because, again, from where this team is right now, again, this is before Terry McLaurin was out. Now it's just like, okay, where are you getting these opportunities? And, you know, it just feels like that would be something I would lean into. And also just – I understand that these guys practice and it's the next man up, but when you're missing this many guys, at some point, like, it feels like this maybe should, like, dial back. I'm not saying that Cliff was, like, going nuts yesterday at all with his creativity with play calls, but sometimes it's like, hey, maybe we should just, like, what are the basics here? Let's run the football, you know, fewer moving parts, so to speak. And I know I'm being overly simplistic with the run game, but, you know, in general, and just focus on that, control the clock. You know, this way, you know, we keep Atlanta, especially with the way they were going with their playmakers, keep them off the field. No, the defense is struggling. Do that. But, yeah, like you said, they didn't really do that. And it is a little confusing. But, again, I think it's different if it's Brian Robinson and Austin Eckler out there as opposed to, you know, two guys.
Maybe, but I've seen enough of Rodriguez and now enough of Bill to know that they're talented runners. I think Kroski Merritt has real legit talent now that we've seen it in real games. And unfortunately, in four games, he's got 29 total carries, 172 yards. He's averaging 5.9 yards per touch. It's time to get him more touches. I'd say the same thing about Rodriguez. I think Rodriguez is solid. Especially yesterday. You know, context is everything. I mean, score wasn't completely out of control until, you know, they got down 31-16. I think I really like Cliff. I love Cliff. I think he is creative. I think they do so many good things. But I think sometimes in game, you know, you got to feel it a little bit more. And they could have, it seemed to me, kept their defense off the field a little bit more by running it more. All right, what else do you have? What else is on your, you know, list of things that you wanted to talk about?
Well, just to your point, to lean back into that, you know, in week three against the Raiders, you know, what do they do? Obviously, they got, you know, the great kick return to help start that game. But the first four runs were all Chris Rodriguez.
Yep.
And up the middle, and the point was to establish, hey, we're going to be physical today. You know, what did they do yesterday? The first play was the end around with Deebo Samuel. Now, I don't know if that's because they're thinking Atlanta is looking for the Chris Rodriguez, so let's give him on the outside. I don't know. Then the next play, Mariota gets sacked, and all of a sudden, you know, you're in a hole, and you're three and out, and Atlanta scores again. So, you know, again, it's too easy to say, well, if they, you know, run the ball to Chris Rodriguez, they don't fall behind by 10 points. I'm not saying that, but
yeah,
there is something to be said for what are we trying to accomplish here? And it just felt like that opening drive, it's like they were trying to accomplish something that just the week before they specifically were trying to do. And I don't know why you would have gone away from that when you were still without key pieces and missing even more. Like, you needed to establish that physicality. And we're going to, you know, be able to move the ball on the ground. And, you know, like I said, it felt like mentally they got away from it a little bit.
Yeah, look, the person listening that would push back would say, you do realize they're the number two rush offense in the league. They're number two in average yards per carry. And I would say, yeah, but they're 18th in rushing attempts. So why not, instead of being number two, being number one in the league and keeping your defense off the field a little bit more? But what do we know? The Green Bay game, I get it. You know, they probably thought it wasn't going to work anyway without Bates in the game. They weren't prepared with a Trent Scott to play, you know, sure, more of that, you know, jumbo sixth offensive lineman. They didn't play it a lot yesterday. They did early. But, yeah, look, questioning play calling is always a dicey thing. But I'd like to see both Rodriguez and Kroski Merritt get more carries, especially in a favorable matchup, which I thought they had yesterday to run the football. All right, thanks. Talk to you later.
Of course. Thanks, man. See you.
Ben Standig, everybody, at Ben Standig on X and on Twitter. We'll go around the NFL, another ridiculously entertaining slate of games. We'll try to hit the big ones when we come back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Go ahead, fire away that first Cowboy-Packer highlight.
They're dropping a lot of safeties in. There are going to be some chances down the field.
That got rid of it. Here's Pickens inside the 10. Pickens to the goal line. He's in for the touchdown. Operation Clean. Kick is right down the middle. And we will go to overtime. If he just put that out of the back of the end zone, they would have run out of time. So McManus is on for the game-tying field goal.
I mean, once you get down inside of 10 seconds, anything can happen. Love could have scrambled around. He gets the ball out of his hands, but my goodness, that was terrible.
Here is McManus for the tie, 34. And this one is good, and this one ends in the second highest scoring tie game in NFL history. 40-40. Each team got it once. Each team got a field goal.
Wow.
And all you can do is just... All right, that's it. No more.
What a football game. If you're wondering what the highest scoring tie game in NFL history was, 43-43 in 1964. Between the Raiders and the then Boston Patriots. That was an AFL game. How about the Cowboys, by the way, in two home games this year, both games have gone to overtime tied at 37 apiece. They beat the Giants 40-37. Last night's game and ended in a tie. All right. So much to this game. Neither defense could get a stop. There it is, the NFL, go figure. Green Bay's defense dominant in the first three games, and then they could not get off the field against the Cowboys, who put up 436 yards, 40 points. Dak Prescott, a phenomenal 31 out of 40 for 319, three touchdowns, no interceptions, got sacked one time. And by the way, that was a Parsons chasing him down in overtime on a play in which he would have scored had Parsons not chased him down. It was a zero-yard gain, but zero-yard gains count as sacks. Dak Prescott's QBR in the game was 94.4. They got a running back, too, this year, and a guy that I've always liked, Javonte Williams. The key with him was just to stay healthy. And Pickens, with no CD Lamb, was outstanding. Now, if you were up watching this game and you saw the way Green Bay handled their overtime drive, shame on Matt LaFleur. They deserved to lose that game. And how, on the final snap before the game-tying field goal, if you watch this complete and utter disaster of a play, Jordan Love hits the check down to Wilson with about 24 seconds to go. They have no timeouts left. They're going no huddle, but they are taking their time. They snap the ball with 6 seconds to go. If this play ends incomplete with no time left on the clock, they lose 40-37. How does the clock operator not wind off that final second in Dallas? Jerry ought to fire that guy because there was a legitimate, you know, opportunity. It was very close to whether it was a second or the clock should have been at zeros at the end. At home, you're supposed to get the benefit. Look, for those of you of a certain age, December 1979, number one seed on the line. Washington hits a pass over the middle down 35-34 to Donnie Warren with 3 seconds to go. Theismann, everybody's screaming timeout, and the Cowboy clock operator ticked the final 3 seconds off the clock, not allowing Mark Mosley a chance at what would have been a 58-59-yard field goal to win the game and win the division. Back then, there was no precision. There was no replay. But last night, they could have easily ticked that last second off, and I don't think it would have been overturned. I think it would have stood. Matt LaFleur's Packers, in a 40-37 overtime game, reached the Dallas 25-yard line with a minute 15 to go and ran four more plays after that. It's almost like they were afraid of, if they didn't score a touchdown and they had to kick a field goal, well, then Dallas only has one completion before they're in Brandon Aubrey range. I understand that. You got to go win the game first. You're down three. You score a touchdown, it's over. They basically haven't been able to stop you all night. Go score the touchdown. That is horrible on Matt LaFleur's part. Terrible that they got super conservative and played. They got one shot into the end zone. They got down to the Dallas 19 and Dallas 12, and there were still 35 seconds left. And they got one shot into the end zone. 40-40, a tie. How is that Green Bay defense? How do they look like that? It's, again, it's hard to figure out. When they changed the overtime rule to now the playoff overtime rule, which means you can't end the game on the first possession with a touchdown, the other team's going to get a possession. I said when they changed the rule, they better extend it to 15 minutes or you've increased the chances of a tie, because they're just these. Now, both teams had lengthy possessions in overtime. I don't know, man. That was a weird way for that game to end. It always feels that way in an NFL tie. At the end of it, it's like, really? But the game was a thrilling game for sure. The Cowboys are 1-2-1. And by the way, I was just looking at this, not that this matters because it's the NFL, but they have the Jets and Panthers the next 2 weeks. If they had won that game, they would have had an opportunity to get to 4-2. Offensively, the Cowboys, even without CeeDee Lamb against that defense, they were unstoppable. The play that turned it around, if you were watching this game, was Green Bay owned the early portion of this game. We're about to go up 14-0 with a PAT. It got blocked and returned for two. And instead of it being 14-0, it was 13-2. And that really seemed to turn the game around. The Cowboys scored on the next possession. Then they got a sack fumble on Love and scored again before the end of the half. And they went from should have been down 14-0 early in the second quarter to up 16-13 at half. Crazy, crazy game in Dallas last night. Of course, you had the Parsons return, and he actually made what turned out to be the most significant defensive play of the game, chasing down Prescott on a play in which Prescott started to scramble and had an open lane to the end zone for a touchdown on the opening possession. Let's go to Tampa for the Eagles and the Bucs.
Oh, they check it out. Saquon Barkley, they fooled everyone. He walks in. Touchdown, Philadelphia.
That was a fake tush push, and it was an easy walk-in touchdown. How about this from yesterday's game? The Eagles led 24-6 at halftime. In the first half, Jalen Hurts was 15 of 16 for 121 yards. In the second, for 130 yards. In the second half, he was 0 for 8. He did not complete a pass in the second half of that game. That game included another blocked score for a touchdown for the Eagles. They had one with Jordan Davis blocking the field goal at the end against the Rams last week. They blocked a punt on the opening possession of the game and scored. It also included a 55-yard field goal, the longest outdoor field goal in NFL history, Chase McLaughlin's kick at the end of the first half. It also included the Bucs with several opportunities down 31-23 on a first and 10 in the red zone. Baker Mayfield threw an unforgivable interception. He does that on occasion, and it's killer. It was first and 10 in the red zone, down 31-23, with like 12 minutes to go in the game, and he threw it to the rookie, Jihad Campbell, in the end zone. That was a devastating play. The Eagles, I mean, gave up a lot defensively, but hung on for a 31-25 win. All they do is figure out ways every week to win games. They are 4-0, and they get the Giants twice in the next four games. And they have, as I said at the beginning of this show, it's early, but they have a two-game lead in the NFC East over Washington. And yeah, a long way to go for sure. But how about six undefeated teams going into Sunday, and now we are left with two after four lost. The Bills and the Eagles are still undefeated. Let's go to the Meadowlands for Jackson Dart's first start against Washington's next opponent.
13 to neighbors, seven before that. Here's a run again by Dart. First and 10, he'll take it in. His first career touchdown, and the Giants on top.
Kevin Harlan on the call there for CBS. The Giants beat the Chargers, ending their undefeated season, 21-18 in Jackson Dart's first start. Look, he was a run threat throughout, and the Giants used him as a run threat. When they had packages for him over the first 3 weeks, he was in there as a running quarterback. He finished 13 of 20 for 111 yards, but rushed 10 times for 54 yards. He also was banged up a little bit in the game and played with what they said was an injured hamstring. The devastating news for the Giants is that it appears as of now that Malik Nabers suffered perhaps a season-ending ACL injury. And with a rookie quarterback, man, it helps to have an elite wide receiver. Malik Nabers had two catches for 20 yards before leaving the game. In this game, Cam Scataboo, you want to protect a young quarterback? Run your tailback 25 times. Now, it wasn't always pretty, but ultimately, counting Jackson Dart's rushing yards, 42 rushes for 161 yards in the game. And I'm going to tell you what, the Giants defensively are legit as a pass rush team. They got 17 hurries. They got 12 quarterback hits. They forced Herbert to throw two interceptions. Burns and Thibodeau and Abdul Carter and Dexter Lawrence are the real deal. They really are sensational as a pass rushing unit. Washington still has another game with the Giants. Remember that. The Chargers lose 21-18 in this one. They had opportunities for sure. Herbert had a rough day. Two picks, two sacks, lots of hurries. 23 of 41 in the game for just 203 yards. The Chargers at home to face our team Sunday at 4:25. Let's go to Arrowhead for the Chiefs and the Ravens.
Pass in zone, caught! Touchdown, Hollywood Brown! Number four for Mahomes. On a fourth down play, no less.
Four touchdown passes for Mahomes. Oh, my God, that Ravens defense is reeling. I know they're injured, but it is historic how bad the Ravens defense is to start this season. They gave up 37 to a team that struggled to score in the first 3 weeks of the season. Mahomes did have Xavier Worthy back, and it was a difference maker for sure. Worthy, five catches, 83 yards, two carries, 38 yards. They rushed for 115. They threw for 270 in four touchdowns. The Chiefs are quietly getting healthier, and Rashee Rice isn't even back. They have now won two straight over two teams, the Giants and the Ravens, who have issues. They're 2-2. The Ravens are 1-3, and Lamar Jackson, left the game with an injured hamstring. We'll see if that's a serious thing or whether or not the game was over and they just took him out. By the way, the Chiefs go to Jacksonville a week from tonight. That's a good Monday night game. Chiefs at Jags next Monday night. The Ravens, they're terrible on defense. Remember, they started this way last year and they got it together. They've had a lot of injuries defensively, and they get the Texans and Rams in their next two. Both of those games are at home. This Texans game becomes almost must win. 1-4 is very difficult to recover from. With that said, the NFC North, right now Pittsburgh's in first at 3-1, but Cincinnati doesn't have Burrow. The Browns don't have enough offense. They could certainly get themselves back into it, but no team has given up more points in the first four games than the Ravens have. 33.6 a game in the first four. Let's go to L.A. for the Rams and the undefeated Colts.
Game-winning drives in his career. Trying to start one here, and he's got Atwell all alone! 2-2 Atwell! And it's 2-2 goodbye!
Yeah, how about an 88-yard touchdown pass to Atwell with a minute 33 to go in the game to break a 20-20 tie? They held on for a 27-20 win over the Colts. The Colts, oof, they did it to themselves. Adonai Mitchell, who's been a good player, he did one of those lose. He didn't drop the ball. He just kind of started to hold the ball up into the air before he got to the goal line on a touchdown catch and run. And the ball came out of his hands and it went through the back of the end zone, costing them a very valuable touchdown. In this game, though, the Rams have one of those quarterbacks with the game on the line you can count on. And Stafford and company ended up with two big touchdowns in the fourth quarter. He threw for 375 and three touchdowns. How about Puka Nacua? 13 catches, 170 yards. Through four games, Nacua has 42 receptions. Let me say that again. If you're wondering what a true superstar receiver looks like, through four games he's been targeted 50 times and he has 42 receptions. 42. I think AJ Brown would like those targets. Really good win for the Rams. I think the Colts, though, prove the point that they are legit. All right, we'll finish up when we come back with a little bit more NFL and something Dan Quinn said in the post game yesterday that I want you to hear.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And coming off a 6-for-6 drive, he'll throw to begin this drive, and it's DK Metcalf! He's in the loose! There goes DK! A block from Austin! Inside the 5, into the end zone! 80-yard touchdown, Rodgers to Metcalf!
Metcalf is a stud. He is a physical freak. The Steelers had this game won. And then Tomlin, they got super conservative. They got a fourth down to ice the game and won, less than one almost, and they decided to punt it. Minnesota almost pulled off a miraculous comeback. Tomlin, not the best at this stuff, never has been, but that team is getting better defensively. It was not good early in the season. We're still early in the season, but I'm saying through the first two or three weeks. And they're getting better defensively. They didn't have Jaylen Warren, but God, Kenneth Gainwell looked really good for them. They ran the ball. Rodgers was 18 of 22. The ball barely hit the ground. And, you know, when you're thrown to DK Metcalf, you can give him 50-50 balls, and he will come down with a lot of them. The Steelers hang on 24-21. Wentz got sacked six times. Got beat up, but also threw for 350 in a pretty entertaining Dublin game early on Sunday morning. Let's go to Vegas for the Bears and the Raiders.
Genty springs free. Turns on the Jets, one guy to beat. Fire, can't bring him down. And the rookie on a dead sprint.
Yeah, Genty had his first big, big run of the year. Man, his lower body strength is impressive. But it wasn't enough for the Raiders. Geno, three more picks. So he threw three picks before our game last week, none against our team, and three picks against Chicago. But the story continues to be the improvement, really, of Caleb Williams. He was solid yesterday, couple of mistakes here and there, but really drove them in the clutch situations, including down the field for what was the go-ahead touchdown which came with about a minute and a half to go. And then we saw another blocked field goal on Daniel Carson's attempt to win the game to give him the lead with about 30 seconds to go. And the Bears have won their second straight game. They get Washington after their bye week next week. They'll come here for a Monday night. So not only do they have a bye week, they don't play until 2 weeks from tonight here in Landover against Washington. How about the 49ers and the Jags?
50-yard punt sends Parker Washington back. He's got a punt return touchdown in his career, and he's got an alley, and he might have his second. 96 yards last year against the Patriots. He's going to house this one. And the Jaguars get the score in special teams. 87 yards.
Yeah, 87-yard punt return for Mr. Parker Washington. And the Jags beat the 49ers, who were undefeated, 26-21. The 49ers had plenty of opportunities in the game. But McCaffrey, Brock Purdy, who was back, two picks. They had two fumbles in the game, including one by Purdy in the pocket. Four total turnovers in the game. That was the difference. -4 in the turnover category. And Jacksonville gets to 3-1. They face the Chiefs next Monday night. Good NFL day once again, and the league just changes each week, but there are a couple of things that are interesting that are developing, including the Bears and Caleb Williams and the job Ben Johnson's done after the rough start. Philly doesn't have to be impressive, but they're undefeated. I think right now the Lions are a team to keep an eye on. They pummeled the Browns, who were excellent defensively, and they were not impressive offensively yesterday. I mean, Goff had his problems. They had some problems at times running the ball, with the exception of a couple of Gibbs, chunk runs. But it was more or less Cleveland's offense was just dreadful. Detroit's better defensively, too. I think in the NFC through 4 weeks, I would pick Detroit as the team that has the best chance of being consistently good and ending up with the most wins in the NFC. That's what I would say right now. Philadelphia is obviously a close second, but we got a long way to go. I wanted to play this one soundbite from Dan Quinn. Do we have time for it? He was talking about Marcus Mariota and the missed opportunities yesterday on offense.
Yeah, I know our team's going to battle back, and so that part I know. We just don't like ourselves being into a hole to go. I thought, as a whole, I thought we ran the ball effectively, with Marcus included into that, making the reads, where to go. I thought we missed some opportunities today, and some penalties certainly cost us into those. So when you're playing a team, man, that you just can't beat yourself on some things, and so we've got to be able to nail that to go. But I thought Marcus was prepared, ready to go, made some plays. Obviously, the score, the 2-point play at the end, like, those are ones that he's exceptional at. And I'll go back and check the tape on others, but trading field goals, that's not the answer, and that's not Marcus. That's all of us to make sure we can go and get scores I'm pleased Matt hit him, but I want to make sure let's score some touchdowns.
Yeah, four field goals. Remember, they had, you know, some of the penalties that they talked about included Marcus's intentional grounding, which led to a second and 20 and a field goal on their second score, which was set up really by the kickoff return by McCaffrey. They had an offensive pass interference against McCaffrey, but they actually, you know, overcame that. Four field goals, though, does hurt on a day in which your defense can't stop the other team. All right, that's it for the day. Back tomorrow. Chris is next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.